time going on there.
Scores! Roll the highlight reel. 6-0 Flames.
Andrews put it in the win column.
Yeah, baby! Yeah, baby! Yeah, baby!
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg and Aaron Vickers on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, we are underway this hour on the program. What's going on? It is a Tuesday, April 29th, with Aaron Vickers of NHL.com. My name is Pat Steinberg. Welcome to the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Did you know that barrier-free access doors are required for commercial entrances and public washrooms? Are you compliant? Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com. Busy hour ahead for you on this Tuesday. Coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcast, live right here on Sportsnet 960. The Fan, the text line's open at 960-960. And looking forward to kicking off the hour this way. We haven't been able to link up with Megan Mickelson over the last couple of weeks. There was a flight to Los Angeles one day, and then there was, just working a game between the Kings and Oilers the next day, or the next week. So it's been a busy postseason stretch for the color voice of the Flames, Megan Mickelson, who joins us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline right now. But this week we were able to link up. Looking forward to it. Hi, Mick. Welcome back.
Hi, how's it going?
I'm good. And you know, one thing, because you immediately went to work, you went right from the end of the season to covering game one between the Jets and Blues. And then you also, last week when we were getting set to chat with you, were doing that game between the Kings and Oilers. So really haven't had an opportunity to wrap up the Flames season with you now that we're a little less than 2 weeks removed from the season coming to an end. So figure today is a perfect time to do that. Now that we've had a little time to digest, now that you've had a little bit of time to reflect on it, like, how do we look back on this season for the Flames that saw them miss the playoffs by a tiebreak, surprise so many people throughout the year, but ultimately not get where they wanted to go, and that is being a playoff team? Is it a successful year? Is it a somewhat successful year? How does Mick look back on this 24-25 campaign?
Well, I would say it's a little bit of both. And I think, you know, it's a massive success in the sense that, you know, they exceeded any and all expectations, I think, coming into the season. So if you look at where they ended up, you know, being so close to making the playoffs, in that respect alone, it's a big success. You look at the youth and the movement that we saw from a lot of the young guys like Dustin Wolf, Connor Zeri, Matt Coronato, Kevin Ball. Like, to me, it's a massive success in giving them experience, more exposure to the NHL, and just seeing how their games evolved over the course of the season. And then, I mean, just, you know, for the team in, you know, really solidifying, you know, who they are and their identity, the way that they want to play, and setting a really good foundation moving forward that they can build off of. Like, you know, there's been so much talk about building for the future, and, you know, they're not trying to win a Stanley Cup now. It's, you know, years down the road. But I think in order to win in any, you know, championship teams that I've been a part of anyways, what they've all had in common is having a really solid foundation. And that requires leadership. It requires having a really good culture, and having an identity in how you want to play. So if you look at those three things, I think that, you know, it was a big success for the team over the course of the season. And I think that, like, for me, when we flew home from LA, that was sort of where my head was at. And then it kind of changed when I was in the whiteout in Winnipeg for game one, you know, St. Louis against the Jets. And I just sat there and I was like, oh my gosh, you know, the Flames, they would have been here. If they had one more point, they would have been here. So I think that, you know, that's when it kind of sunk in for me that they were so close. So it's hard to think of it as not being a success when, you know, they were that close to making the playoffs. And because of one point, one game that slipped away from them, no matter when it was over the course of the season, like there's so many games that we could, you know, a lot of people look back to the Anaheim game and blowing that one and thinking, you know, if they just could have held on. But, you know, there was a couple of times over the course of the season where games just sort of slipped away from them or they should have won and they didn't. So, you know, to me, I think it's not a success in knowing how competitive this team is. And just the potential that they had. And, you know, I really think that they could have been there, that they deserve to be there. So there's obviously, you know, there's a number of different ways that you can look at it. But I think the biggest thing for me that I take away from the season is just that foundation that they have to build off of moving forward. And that is what's most important.
Yeah, I think the answer to this question can vary depending on who you're asking and whether they're optimistic or pessimistic about what happened. Because at the end of the day, this is a team that's in a bit of a retool. We all know that they're trying to get younger. And it's a situation where you played 82 games and no playoffs and no top five pick. So you didn't even get the treat or the reward for being competitive. And you didn't get the treat or the reward for being so bad in that top five draft pick. But at the end of the day, you've more than exceeded expectations, at least externally. I know internally the team, right from September, right from training camp, believed that this was a team that was going to compete right up to game 82, and they certainly made it to game 81. But in hearing both players, management, coaches talk on locker cleanout, the three key buzzwords, and you hit on them, Mick, were foundation, identity, culture. And none of that ever felt for one moment that they were just paying lip service to those three pillars or those three things that were established. So in that, I think the optimist can point to that and say, this was a very critical year in ensuring that this is a group that has an identity, has a culture, has set that foundation that'll benefit the young players that were a part of it for years to come.
Yeah, like it's funny. And I think a part of it, part of how I frame this season, like, Mick, I definitely feel like for some of these, specifically Dustin Wolf, but I think Adam Klapka, Matt Coronato, big part of that as well. Connor Zeri to a certain extent, although the knee injuries made it a little bit more difficult for him to be a part of the stretch drive when the team was fighting tooth and nail and going on that 11-2-3 run to wrapping up the year. It's still crazy to think. I remember I was walking out of the building at crypto.com on that game 82, Mick, and walking out of there talking to somebody with the Flames and saying, can you imagine going 11-2-3 and not making up any ground? And that's what happened.
I mean,
I guess they did make up ground on Minnesota, but Minnesota had such a big lead that they were able to finally nurse it home. But they didn't make up any ground on St. Louis, despite the fact they did go 11-2-3. But for me, the big part is, okay, now these young players have gotten the experience. What do they do with it next? And for me, that's what I think will ultimately determine how successful this year was. And it kind of leads into that next question I've got for us. And that is, like, how do they make sure that they do build on this next season? How do they make sure that this was not just a year where they exceeded expectations and surprised the hockey world and made it so that we were talking about this all season long? But there have been other years where they've done that, maybe snuck in and surprised some people and then took a step back. What's going to be important to make sure that they build on this year and make it so next year they're in a little bit of a better spot?
Well, I think for me, like, a lot of it comes down to, like, individual accountability as well. Like, I don't think that there's any question now that foundation has been laid, it's set. And, you know, calling that game 82 in LA, you know, one of the things that I took away from that game was what a great job the vets and the leadership group did of, you know, there's four guys that are playing in their first NHL games, how comfortable they made them feel. And that's really important for player development as a young player coming in, making sure that, you know, you have that core veteran leadership group and just the environment within your team that is conducive to development and, you know, allowing young players to come in to feel comfortable so that they can progress the way that they need to so that they can feel like they're a part of the team and so that they can, you know, be at their best. So, you know, I think that's one thing that's a given now, I think. And that's something that moving forward for the group, I think is a non-negotiable. But, you know, from an individual player standpoint, you know, and if it were me at the end of a season saying, okay, you know, if I was at my best, or, you know, if I set a bar for myself, so you look at a guy like Dustin Wolf, I would say, like, he raised the bar. It's now you have to come in at the start of next season at that same level and make sure that you're continuing to make progress. If you're a player that wasn't at your best, then taking a long look in the mirror and figuring out why you weren't at your best and what you need to do to get there. So from an individual player standpoint, there's, you know, that aspect in players making sure that if they elevated their games, if they stay at that level, if they weren't where they needed to be, how do they get to a higher level? And then, you know, that as a collective, when you bring all those players together, that allows, you know, the level of play of the team to remain at that, you know, set bar level, I guess that you could say. The other thing, and this really, it really stood out to me, you know, on Locker Cleanout Day when Ryan Huska was talking about just the emphasis that they were placing on pace and speed, and that was a big thing that they gave players, you know, as a takeaway to work on in the summer and to make sure that they were coming back and that they were going to be, you know, a much faster team. And I think that you become a faster team by, you know, again, as individual players, what are you doing in the gym? What are you doing in terms of, you know, power skating, that sort of thing? And I have to say that it is really hard to get faster. It's, you know, it sounds like something that's really easy to do, but your explosive speed and power, like without the puck, that takes weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks. Like, that will take an entire summer to see, like, marginal improvements. And the older you are, the harder it is to get faster. But then the other thing is your speed with the puck as a player. And that's something that is, you know, really hard to accomplish as well when you're looking at making gains. But then it's playing with pace and speed as a team. And that's how you're supporting the puck, how you're moving the puck up the ice and those sorts of things. So, you know, I think long answer short, I could probably go on forever about this, but, you know, their team, they know how they need to play. They have that foundation set. Individual players know if they were at their best, you know, where the bar is for themselves, if they weren't, how they're going to be better and why, what areas you need to be better in. But then I think, you know, for this team to get better, they need to have more speed and more pace.
For me, and this kind of runs parallel with the first part of your answer, Mick, but it's more up push or more ownership from the younger players on the team that are a bit more comfortable in the NHL. Now, don't defer. This is your team too. You have a say, you have some ownership, and you had a great veteran core that showed you what leadership looked like in that room. So you don't necessarily need to piggyback off it, but you also do have a voice in how this thing is going to go. And I look at players like Dustin Wolf, Matt Coronato, Connor Zeri, Kevin Ball as sort of that next generation of leaders for the Calgary Flames. Take what you learn, take what you observe, take what you did or maybe didn't do in that room and add layers to that core six plus, you know, Ryan Lomberg. It's a running joke now that it's plus six, or sorry, the core six plus Ryan Lomberg. We can't switch to core seven. It's just core six plus Ryan Lomberg. But
maybe next year it'll be seven.
I bet you that's how it starts. But then it'll be the core seven plus a Wolf or plus a Coronado, so on and so forth. You need those young players to take more ownership of your wins, of your losses, of things when they're going poorly, but also when they're going well. And again, they had a crash course in leadership from the veterans of the Calgary Flames. You can embrace that and you can add your part to it as well.
Yeah. And just to follow up, Mick, like, I don't know, like, I think maybe the biggest thing for me is, and it could come down to this, and I'm feeling pretty confident this will happen, but, you know, them not taking a step back might be as simple as Dustin Wolf not taking a step back next year. And a lot of goaltenders do have a slightly less or significantly less successful second year compared to their first year. But I don't know, just the way Dustin Wolf works, the way that he throws himself into the craft, the way that he is as self-aware a guy in terms of his strengths and weaknesses as I've ever been around in the sport. I don't really get the sense that complacency or anything like that will set in with a guy like Wolf. I think we're talking about him working his tail off this summer, working with some of his trusted goaltending advisors on the weaknesses that he's got to figure out, and coming back a better goaltender next year. And I'm not expecting a down year from Wolf. Maybe it's not a huge step forward, but even if we talk about Dustin Wolf being status quo in year two, because goaltenders do progress maybe a little slower, I think you're okay with that if you're the Flames, because if Wolf is as good next year as he was this year, I think they've got a chance to be right there in the mix once again.
Well, and, you know, I totally agree with you, Pat, and I think, like, what should have been a part of my answer is that they need as good of goaltending next season as they got this season.
Yeah.
And that's from both goaltenders, because a huge reason why they were even in the mix to make the playoffs was because of the goaltending that they got. But you're right. I mean, I don't see Dustin Wolf, I don't see any of these guys honestly not working their tails off this summer. And if you're not working your tail off this summer, then I'm sorry, in my opinion, then you don't deserve to be in the NHL.
Very fair. Very, very fair. Well, we're chatting with Megan Mickelson. She is the color voice of the Calgary Flames, joins us every week here on Flames Talk, and is joining us right now on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Might as well transition, keep it on the goaltending front. Just touched on Wolf. What about Dan Vladar, friends? Like, and Mick, you saw this goaltending tandem throughout the year. How much do you want to see this same goaltending tandem return next year?
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's very important, I think. I mean, you look at, like, what you just mentioned about Dustin Wolf. Okay, you know, what if he does have some off nights or some off games and, you know, need some backup support? You'll need some backup support at, you know, any point in time over the course of the season. But if this team wants to be competitive, then you need a backup goaltender that you know can come in and play. And to me, I just think that, you know, hearing Ryan Huska talk on locker cleanout day, like, it was very evident. He said, you know, one thing that we wouldn't need to worry about going into next season if they had those two guys was the goaltending position. But, you know, I think what would concern me is if you have Dustin Wolf, well, you have Dustin Wolf, of course, but if you don't have a guy like Dan Vladar that you know that you can trust, that you know is he knows Dustin Wolf, they figured out how they need to work together, you know that he can come in and play some really solid games for you, whatever the situation is, you know, whenever Dustin Wolf needs some support. And I just think that Dan Vladar, he proved time and time again that he was able to do that. So, you know, honestly, if I'm the Flames, I'm saying, you know, it's not like you're signing Dan Vladar to a long-term massive cash deal. But, you know, I'd take a really long, hard look at trying to figure out what it is that he wants and trying to sign him, because I just think that he's the perfect backup goalie for a young guy like Dustin Wolf, so that he can continue. Like, Dan Vladar knows what his role would be. He knows what his job is. He would be the backup. So, you know, I think that for me, that's one of, you know, probably the most important pieces, and would just give you a lot of peace of mind heading into next season if you can lock down Dan Vladar. Because honestly, I don't see at this point, and maybe, you know, if I saw more, I would be more convinced. I don't see any other goaltenders in the organization. You have to look outwards that will, you know, be able to as easily, seamlessly, and as confidently be able to do what Dan Vladar could do in the backup role.
Well, and Dan Vladar is pretty aware of who his goaltending partner would be if he comes back with the Flames. He said as much. As he's like, we all know what Wolfie is and what he's going to be and what he means to the organization. I think the thing that would give me comfort in bringing Dan Vladar back is, going back to September, for me, the biggest question mark about the Calgary Flames was, what is this goaltending tandem, or what is the goaltending position in general going to look like for the Flames? You had a rookie goalie coming in, and you had another goalie who had played less than 100 NHL games, and that was going to be your tandem. And seeing them evolve throughout the season where, yes, it started as a sort of a 50-50 split, and Dan Vladar really in the early part of the season insulated Dustin Wolf from a lot of difficult situations, which I think allowed Wolf to flourish. And then as the season progresses and he gets more comfortable, perhaps he's coming off that hip surgery and feeling more confident in his body and his movements, and suddenly he's put in a position post Four Nations where, listen, every game mattered for the Calgary Flames from the Four Nations onward. He went out and put up a 5-1-1 record with a 1.99 goals against and a .926 save percentage. So it's not just the fact that he can help Wolf, that he did help Wolf, that they obviously have a good rapport together as goaltenders. It's the fact that he came out and in crunch time for the Flames also delivered on top of doing all those other things. And that's what would give me confidence in bringing him back.
Yeah, and honestly, like I'm okay, Mick, if they have to bump the AAV a little bit. Like, they've got nothing.
Yeah, exactly.
They've got nothing but cap room, right?
You have so much money. And give them a little bit more to get what you want and what you need.
And as you said, it's not going to be long term. It's, 2 years. So they'll be, if they have to bump it to $3 or $3.1 million to get them to stay, like, okay. And then that gives, whether it's Sergeyev or Cooley or anybody else in the organization, or they pinpoint somebody else, like, that gives you time to find another backup for Wolf if that's the way you want to go. So I think keeping Vladar makes nothing but sense here going forward. So we'll see if they do. It feels like, I don't know, it felt pretty genuine, Mick, listening to him on Green Garbage Bag Day or Locker Cleanout Day. Geez, that's outdated, though, the first term I used. But on Locker Cleanout Day, it sure did feel like, he would like to stay. I do think he's quite comfortable and happy as a member of the Flames.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I could see is, maybe if he feels like there's more opportunity elsewhere, he's not going to be the number one goaltender here. If maybe he feels like that he would get more of a shot, more games, I'm not sure, somewhere else, and maybe that's something that, he would probably want to explore and see. Like, he's not old, he's 27 years old, so that's the one thing that I could see, holding this back is, if he feels like there's more somewhere else. But everyone always thinks the grass is greener, so I mean, easier said than done, but if I were him, if the Flames gave me, what I wanted in terms of AAV, I'd be signing.
Yeah. I'll save one of those topics till our next chat, because at this time of year, it's always good to save topics. So we will do that for our next chat. Enjoy the games tonight, Mick. Enjoy your week. It's good to have you back on Flames Talk. Get out of here.
Great to be back. See you guys.
My friend, Megan Mickelson is the color voice of the Calgary Flames, and she joins us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, serving the best pizza, pasta, steaks, and ribs for over half a century. Dine in at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast or call 403-248-3344 for pickup or delivery.
You're locked on Flames Talk, only on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Steinberg Vickers along with you as we continue along this hour from our Groundworks downtown studio, your local experts for foundation and crawl space repair. Great to chat with Mick. Good to have Mick back with us on Flames Talk each week. First of all, news has been lots of World Championship Flames news over the last little bit. And over the, the last week we found out that Sam Hanzik is going. We found out Matt Coronato will not go now. And then on this Tuesday, we found out, as we were expecting, Adam Klapka will go. So Vix leaves for World Championships, or the World Championship.
Thank you. I actually very much appreciate that.
I really had to go and research it this year. I'm like, is it World Championships or is it World Championships? It's the IIHF World Championship in Stockholm, Sweden, and Herning, Denmark. So Adam Klapka is heading there. He'll join Dan Vladar on Team Czechia. So that brings the count to, for Team Canada, Ryan Huska, head coach. We're expecting that to be announced sometime later on this week, but he will be an assistant coach, and we're expecting to have Huska on with us at some point this week on the World Championship appointment. Mackenzie Weegar, Zane Parekh going for Team Canada as well. For Team Sweden, Rasmus Andersson, Michael Backlund. As we mentioned, Klapka Vladar for Czechia, Honzek for Slovakia, no Americans going. So that's the, am I missing anything there? Some staff going for Canada as well.
Yeah,
but
some staff.
Including Sean Kelso. But otherwise, I think that's it, right?
Yeah, I don't think you missed anybody. I don't think I'm sitting on pins and needles. Adam Klapka, for me, was sort of the last domino to fall in terms of Flames representation at the World Championship. I don't imagine that there's any further news coming.
I do think it's like there have been years when you go, if you're wondering why we're talking about Aaron going to the
it's
World
a running
Championship,
joke.
It is, but in this case, we're not joking. You've gone pretty much every year for the last,
outside of the COVID years, I believe 2017 through to 2019. So three there.
Did you make it in 2022?
Yeah, no.
Because the Flames went to game five of round two that year. So
I did not participate in that one.
So every year, but that pretty much. So a lot of years don't get a lot of Flames representation. I mean, there's some here and there, but I can't remember a year where you're talking 7 players and a coach all going. Plus, Coronado was going to go before the MRI. So you were going to have 8 players and a coach, but there's 7 players and a coach. Like, you're going to have lots to cover as our Flames Talk World Championship correspondent.
Have we calculated or figured out, like, am I going to do a weekly segment? You're just going to talk to me once? Like, I'm a little worried. I'm going to go through Pat Steinberg withdrawals.
Well, you'll be just fine. You'll be in beautiful Scandinavia. I think you'll be all right.
Okay.
I'm very, like, in a good one. Very, very, it's cool. I love that you get an opportunity to
do
this.
Too.
But also very jealous in, like, a non-creepy or toxic way. But it's also an 8-hour time difference. So, like, do you want to be coming on at 11 o'clock with us?
I think that's a question I can flip back to you. Are you going to want to have me on at 11 o'clock?
Depends how many Swedish beers you've got in you.
From what I hear, they're like, with the conversion, they're not cheap, so I might have to dial it in a little bit, to be honest with you.
Well, I mean, I was in San Diego in February, and let me tell you, even the, like, Michelob Ultra Special, I was still paying like $11 Canadian for a beer.
Like this is...
That's for the $5.50 or $6 yeah. Michelob Ultras. If you wanted to have like anything else...
Yeah, I'm looking at about 18 to 20 per.
Like, you're right on the Mexican border, and if you want to have like a Dos Equis or a Corona or something like that on tap, it's like 16 Canadian when you get the exchange rate. California prices and exchange rate. Anyway, I digress. I'm looking forward to it for you. You'll have lots of Flames content to cover, eh?
Oh yeah, and I'll be doing some stuff for NHL.com. Obviously, that's who's sending me, but I'll also be doing a fair bit for CalgaryFlames.com as well. So you'll be able to find some fresh world stories live from Stockholm.
Yep.
And Herning. Not so much Herning, but a little Herning.
Where are most of the good games being played in Stockholm?
I mean, that is very subjective. I know from a city and venue and setup perspective, I'm looking more forward to Stockholm, if I'm being perfectly honest. But like, and as it stands for Flames content, Canada is going to be in Stockholm. So that's Uyghur, Perek, Huska. Obviously, Sweden's going to be in Stockholm. So that's Anderson, Backlund. So I do believe Czechia and Slovakia are both playing in Herning. So we're going to see a lot of, Adam Klapka, Dan Vladar, and Sam Honzik are going to see a lot of Aaron Vickers early on in the tournament.
Okay, so you'll bang, and then everybody will move to Stockholm for the medal round, right?
Correct.
Okay.
The quarterfinal, depending on what Denmark itself does, Team Denmark, will impact who moves where. But yes, the semifinals and finals, gold medal game, bronze medal game, however you want to look at it, will be held in Stockholm.
Herning is not close to Copenhagen.
No. Is it going to be a three and a half hour train ride?
Oh, you're training?
Yeah.
Okay.
Now, there are direct flights from Herning to Stockholm, but the easier route might actually be to train back to Copenhagen, then go Copenhagen to Stockholm. I haven't flushed entirely everything out yet with this trip. I just know I can get to Europe, and I know I have places to stay when I'm in Europe.
So you're going
to
train from Herning to Stockholm? Is that?
No. Because I don't think...
Oh, Copenhagen to Herning.
Herning back to Copenhagen, then fly most likely.
Dude, take a flight. Are you kidding? That is a haul. I thought it was like going to be close. But
it's a lot more dramatic on the map you're looking at than it is in real life.
Stockholm's east coast of Sweden.
Yeah, like...
And Herning's western Denmark.
Yeah. Huh. They not that they take me into consideration, but they certainly didn't make life easy on the old commute going back and forth. Like, there'll be some years where I will go city A to city B and then back to city A. So I'm, you know, you do 4 days in one, 4 days in the next, and then you wrap up the tournament where the medal round's going to be. Not so convenient to try to execute that one this year.
Well, anyway, that should be fun.
For those wondering about my travel plans.
I don't think we're surprised that Rick Tocchet's out in Vancouver.
No.
It kind of felt like it was going this way, but I don't know. Like, the reporting now is that they put a lucrative long-term deal on the table for Tocchet to try to keep him, didn't sway him. So Rick Tocchet just doesn't want to be in Vancouver anymore. They go from Rick Tocchet winning the Jack Adams, taking them to game seven of round two, and narrowly losing to the Oilers. They go from that to this nightmare season where you've got a couple of
infighting
babies going back and forth, and Pettersson and Miller. Those two guys can't figure it out. You Thatcher Demko can't stay healthy. Luckily, they found Kevin Lankinen, and he kept them competitive, but Lankinen isn't a guy that can play a number one workload the same way a guy like Demko can,
at least in theory,
but Demko can't stay healthy. You have no idea if he's going to be able to play 30, 40, 50 games next year. And now we have two consecutive Jim Rutherford news conferences. By the way, I thought Patrick Alvin was the general manager. Apparently, Jim Rutherford still calls all the shots as the president of hockey operations. But Jim Rutherford, he goes, as they wrapped up their season, what was that, last week or a week and a half ago, and Jim Rutherford's talking about Quinn Hughes leaving to go play with Luke and Jack in New Jersey. And like, you're like, okay, what are you talking about? Like, what are you doing? Like, why are you discussing this publicly? And then another Rutherford kind of shot at Quinn Hughes today, Tuesday, because as we know, Quinn Hughes was very adamant about wanting Tocchet to stay.
Right.
And very adamant about Tocchet being a huge part of their success going forward. That's not going to happen now. And so Jim Rutherford asked about Quinn Hughes in kind of a, did he have a conversation with Quinn before this Rick Tocchet decision was made? And here's the president of hockey operations again.
Well, I hope he's playing golf because he usually returns my calls right away. And I called him within a half an hour after I talked to Rick. So he hasn't called me back yet. Knowing how he feels about the coach and that he's a sensitive guy, I would suspect that he's feels like I do, that we're disappointed. But knowing the maturity of Quinn, he will make the adjustment necessary. But they did have a very strong relationship, a very good one. And Quinn had a lot of respect for him. And Tocchet had a lot of respect for Quinn. So there will definitely be an adjustment there.
Did you have to add in that he didn't pick up your phone calls? Like, was that necessary?
Are you trying to suggest your player is upset at the organization? Because that's how I almost interpreted it.
Like, I don't know. This is with no with minimal disrespect intended to Elias Pettersson. But Quinn Hughes is the player that matters.
He's
in
your
Vancouver.
Franchise.
That is your franchise. Why are we taking veiled shots at that? And maybe I'm reading too much in between the lines, but like, why are we saying, oh, yeah, I didn't pick up my phone call, but here's, I'm going to, like, just say that, yeah, Quinn's disappointed, or I haven't had a chance to talk to the players yet, or what, lie, but, like, what are we doing here? Like, do you want this guy to stay beyond the 2 years remaining on his contract? You're already talking about him going to play in New Jersey. Now you can't keep the coach.
Now you can't get a hold of your captain.
Well, and then you're publicly putting him on blast for it? Jim Rutherford's a Stanley Cup winner. And he's going to go into the Hall of Fame and all that type of stuff. I'm not even trying to say that Jim Rutherford doesn't know what he's doing. He's always been this guy. He's always been a very outspoken and aggressive guy in hockey ops. And that's part of why he's had the success he's had in Carolina and Pittsburgh. But I don't understand the thought process of, I don't know, continually risking pissing off your franchise player who's only got 2 years left on his deal at maybe the biggest bargain in the NHL at $7.85 million.
It's just been a weird sort of exodus for the Vancouver Canucks since, you know, as you mentioned, being that close to advancing to the Western Conference Final a year ago. And you talk about JT Miller and Elias Pettersson and their infighting. Okay, you got rid of Miller, but it's been widely reported that you're trying to get rid of Pettersson as well. You're going to potentially lose Brock Besser for nothing to unrestricted free agency. You don't know what Thatcher Demko is going to be or do moving forward. And it feels like you're needling your captain a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, that is an absolute 180 of a franchise in 365 days.
Less than that.
Yeah.
They were still in round one against Nashville, ready to win a playoff round a year ago.
I mean, come on, man. I just picked an easy round number.
But I digress. And you're right. I only bring that up because, like, less than a year, what an absolute
turnaround.
Mess.
But not in a good way. This is what Quinn Hughes said a couple weeks ago on Rick Tocchet. He's an amazing coach. You look at me individually in my game. He's been amazing for me, amazing for a lot of guys. He's just a great person, first of all. That's a guy you want to compete for, you want to play for. He's not around anymore.
I mean, maybe Quinn was already out the door anyway, and Rutherford knows that. But like, if you're
you're not helping your trade value, your trade position. Then
I want to go read a text here, not a text, read a tweet from a gentleman that I follow. He also happens to be a colleague, Jason Bruff, who is one of the two hosts of Halford and Bruff in the morning on Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver, and he is the SAD Club Commissioner, and he goes, well, the coach just quit, and the captain won't return the president's calls, and there was that big rift between the top two centers forcing a trade and leaving the one who's completely lost his game. But other than that, oh, wait, Demko's injury. But other than that, which is so true.
That doesn't even mention the 30-goal scorer Brock Besser walking for free.
Which is almost certainly going to happen. It went from the Vancouver Canucks watch out to the Vancouver Canucks like, oh, okay, have fun. Like, what are you? They were no good this season based on what they should be. You've got an $11 million player who, as that tweet from Bruff just said, completely lost right now.
Can't find it.
How does it go so bad so quickly? And I know that, you know, it's Vancouver. That's the way it goes. It's always a bit of a hotbed for these types of things, but goodness.
Incredible. I think that's the only adjective.
No kidding.
Incredible.
Okay. One more topic. Do you want to do Dallas, Colorado, or do you want to do Edmonton, Los Angeles?
Edmonton, Los Angeles.
How do you feel about game 5 on Tuesday night? The Oilers, as Frank Saravalli said in hour one, they have no business being tied 2-2, and yet here they are tied 2-2.
I was going to say, yet here we are. I, again, the Los Angeles Kings to me have been the better team in this series. Largely, they've had a few hiccups along the way. If you're a member or if you're a citizen of Calgary, chances are you're hoping that they can put together a full 60. We are a Quinton Byfield chip off the boards away from a 3-1 series lead for the Kings. Mm-hmm. And it's going back to crypto. They were the best team on home ice in the regular season. Looked it in game 1 and 2. Game 5, thanks Tibbs, pretty pivotal in this series.
Mm-hmm.
You, what are you feeling? What are your vibes?
I'm a little worried about the Kings. They should be trying to eliminate the Oilers, and I just worry about the seed of doubt that's creeping in. That is what worries me, because damn, I don't want the Oilers to get into round 2 and go deep again. And yet I feel like the Kings missed. The Oilers played
opportunity lost.
The Oilers played a really gutsy game in game 3. I'll give them credit for that. But they had no business winning game 4, and they did. Quinton Byfield, Shan's favorite player.
Chip it off the boards. What are you doing?
I think Shan's still mad at Quinton Byfield.
Who?
Shan.
Not familiar.
Not familiar. I still think this is LA's series to win.
Yes.
I still don't trust either goaltender or a single one of Edmonton's blue line.
So here's where I would be on this. I don't see a path to a series win for the Kings if they lose game five.
Yeah.
I think it's curtains for them if they don't win game five.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with that.
And I mean, it's not really a bold, hot, spicy take. Oh, game five winner usually wins, what, 75-80% of each series? I haven't looked up the stat. I'm sure it's available on the media site. But it just feels like with everything that's slipped away from the Kings, particularly in that game four, they lose game five. And you go back in history, this is what, how many times in a row have they opened with the Edmonton Oilers? I feel like there's a little bit of, I don't know, voodoo's not the right word, but there's a little bit of history that might creep into the back of the minds of the Los Angeles Kings.
Game five goes on Tuesday night from Crypto.com Arena. Somebody will be a game away from advancing after game five.
I guarantee you that.
There's your thanks tips moment of the Tuesday. Aaron Vickers on Twitter at AA Vickers. Thanks to Shan Hughes and Cam Vergie. Thanks to Cameron Hughes. Thanks to Shan Vergie, our outstanding producers this hour. And that'll start to wrap us up on the Sports Drive. Brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Did you know that barrier-free access doors are required for commercial entrances and public washrooms? Are you compliant? Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.